this past Monday night, I was honored to be there when Ken called this gathering and made this announcement. And I remember we were all in the prayer room back there, and I was just sitting there, and you know, Ken, just like he did today, just out with it, you know, just said what tonight was about and what it was about and what the decision he had come to. And just this unpredictable, like, wave of emotion just came rushing into me. And I was disoriented a little bit. And I told them this Monday night, but I was just sitting there. And fortunately, we got a bunch of guys in there. And everybody, this group's just so beautiful. The elders just spontaneously just started sharing with Ken gratitude and praise, and praise for Christ in Ken and through Ken, and remembering his contribution. And man, I was just sitting there. Part of my brain was taking that all in and going, this is just so beautiful, the fellowship that these guys have. And the other part of my brain is trying to figure out what's all this emotion? Why is this such a heavy announcement? He's not dead, right, Ken? He's still alive and well and kicking. But he's not leaving. You know, he's still here, but still there was something about it. And you know those movies, some of the ones that are out now that I'm thinking of, or recent ones that have their power in their story. My Sister's Keeper. I don't know how many of you saw that. How many of you saw, this was last year, but The Ultimate Gift. One that's out right now, The Blind Side. Right? These movies, their power rests in, on the big screen, the demonstration of love. That's where their power rests. That's what resonates. That's what compels, draws you in, makes you want to see it again, make you tell somebody that's, you need to go to that one. Those kind of movies have this major plot of love, and it demonstrates it in a story. And maybe it's not the movie experience here this morning, but what you just witnessed from Ken, what you witnessed here, but what you're witnessing him do, is a demonstration of his love. That's what you just witnessed. And what he's been doing as an elder here has been a demonstration of his love. And what you saw our shepherds, what's going on in our shepherds' hearts as they see what he's doing and witness what he's doing, is a demonstration of love, the power of this place, Southwest Church Christ, is the incredible demonstration of God's love. It is. That's the power of this place. And if there's any other power, it's just a byproduct of that. And or unnecessary. Because that's what this place is about. Ken said it here, but he said it Monday night too, and it was just gripping. He said, I'm stepping down from this formal position of elder. I'm not stopping shepherding. You know, that's not what I'm not giving that up. As a matter of fact, I would see what he's doing, what you're doing now, Ken and Jerry, as a consistent with your decision to shepherd back when you became one here. He's shepherding less, better. And that's each other and Kenna and their family. And I see this as, I see this as an action of shepherding, not as a stepping down. It is a sacrificial act of love. And there's this other subplot in what Ken's doing, is the community that these elders have. He also mentioned last Monday night, and I'm giving you this because I just want you to know, what you see is what you get with these guys. They are who they say they are. And that's it. That's all they are. There's not some grand scheme, some inner circle of agenda running going on. They are a community of love. That's what your elders are. And that's what they want you to have. And that's the ministry they're trying to put together here. It's just one big circle of love. He said what he missed most about being an elder. He said two things that stuck out to me. He said, I'll miss being with you guys, you know, in these contexts. He said, and I'll miss being in prayer with you guys. To which they quickly said, hey, you don't have to miss that. You know, and he said, that's right. We open our Sunday prayer groups up to our whole church. And he says, I'll probably be the one that takes you up the most. So, but I see ingrained in Ken the two values of Christ, but the two values of this church. The community that we want to have with one another, he's going to miss those guys. And the community we want to have with God, he's going to miss prayer with those guys. They are walking examples of the vision we seek to promote in the world, that Christ seeks to promote in the world. It comes out of them without effort, these guys. I say it's without effort. It costs them their lives. They can put all their effort into it and never be done. But they are an incredible group of men that have changed my life. And when I tell you about this, just this well of emotion that was bubbling up, it finally came to me what was going on. I mean, you can see this is a pretty mighty transition for the Mosses and Ken. It's a well of emotion for him. Transitioning is, you know, changing is, no matter how small it is or how big it is, it's tough and it's momentous. And I realized why Ken's announcement affected me so is because 5.5 years ago, I had a transition, pretty momentous for me, just coming from Houston to Amarillo, leaving the West Houston church family to come and join the Southwest church family. And it was big for me. And there were six men here that I had met. So at the time, there were six elders. And I didn't want to come here. And I mean, and it wasn't because of anything wrong with you guys, you know. It was because I was fully ingrained where I was. I have a church family. The elders at West Houston, they were like spiritual dads to me. They had, you think you've tolerated stuff? You should have gotten me in my youth. I mean, these guys, 14 years, y'all are 1/3 of the way there. I mean, they fathered me. They mentored me. They raised me up. They were irreplaceable in my heart. And the church family that was there and what was ingrained there and how I was ingrained there, that there's no way I was leaving, but God had his way of getting me to come up here and visit with your elders. And I saw something in them that matched what I'd been praying to happen in our church in Houston. I've always had this ideal. I don't know if you know this about me. I've got these high ideals. You know, it kind of starts with the word Christ, Christ-likeness. And I try to follow those. I preach those. I teach those. I try to conform to those. I want others to conform to those. And I have this idea of what, of how a leadership group and a shepherding group, an eldership, based on my study of the Bible and my experience with human beings, how they ought to be. You know, not what they should do necessarily. There's lots of freedom there, but I had this idea of what they ought to be, the kinds of attitudes they should have, the courage they should have, the capacity to love, to be real, to be honest. I had this dream of that. And I came up here and I put your elders, they may not see it like this, but maybe they do see it worse than I put them through litmus test after litmus test. You know, because I knew they weren't the ideal that I needed. And that would be the only reason I would ever leave West Houston. And it's not that those guys at West Houston weren't on their way there, but I was praying for them and praying for me with them. But I came here and everything every test, every fleece I put out, so to speak, it was those six guys. They with ease, they just passed them. Right or wrong, that's what happened. And it was those six names. When I would go home not wanting to leave there in Houston, and God wouldn't let me sleep, it was you six elders, Ken, of which you are one. It was these six men that God used to say to me, Brian, it can be that way. It was these guys. And so I think that's why. You know, Ken, for me, I know for others out here, the stories would be different about how y'all have influenced them. But I'm so grateful. I will never recover from the gift that your family has played in my life in that time and continues to play. And I'm just so grateful for you saying yes back then when Brent taught that leadership series and the body selected you to be an elder. I didn't know way back then what an impact it would have on me. And it's still affecting me. And, you know, I want to say this too. These men that are your elders, I'm sitting here pumping them up here. But I don't want you to, and they would never want you to think that they're some kind of superheroes. You know, like, and by that I mean they are superheroes. A lot of you people are. Y'all are my heroes, but I mean by that, they don't have some superpower that makes them qualified to play that role in my life or in your life. They're not great men, like by birth. They're not great men because they've got some special gift. They do have special gifts. They do, each of them, different ones. It's phenomenal. But that's not why they're great men. They are great men because they love greatly. They just love a lot. That's their qualifications. That's their pedigree, I guess. That's why they're a powerful group. They love God. Like, it's not just a Bible verse to them. They love God with all their heart, soul, mind, and strength. And they love each other like that. And they'll love you like that. And they've loved me like that. And they want you to love like that. Because that love for God and love for others, they don't want life without that anymore. And they won't have it. That's why they're great. We're going to be, which is perfect for this study we're about to begin this next month or so in 1 John. Because it is all about love. And it struck me, and I knew this was coming today, and so I was kind of going, how do I begin this series on 1 John with this? And I'm not really going to necessarily begin it, so this will be 2 weeks that I haven't begun it, but I've talked about 1 John. But we're going to go through it expositionally, just kind of verse by verse, section by section, starting next week, I think. That's the plan. But as I looked at John, I just started thinking of him as an author. And, you know, he has quite a few. He only has three little letters here. He wrote a gospel. John is his, but then 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John, they're his too. And they're just three little letters. And in these letters, it struck me, you know, John is this major. He is like this super character in the gospels. He is one of the superheroes. He seems like he does have special powers. You know, he's got all these titles that we've given him that kind of, you know, when somebody gets a title, that like elevates them a little bit. I mean, he was one of the 12 apostles. You know, already we consider them like superheroes. Paul did too. Paul's an apostle, but he called the original 12, he called them in one letter super apostles. He used those words, and John's one of those guys. He's known as the disciple of love, and you'll find out shortly, if you don't know why, from his writings, why he's called that in 1 John. He calls himself the disciple that Jesus loved. I think I mentioned that last week. So he's known as that. Mark 3 calls him a son of thunder. He and his brother were called the sons of thunder. That's a cool title. I like that one. He's known as John of Patmos because in his later years he was sent to the Isle of Patmos. He's called John the Revelator because he also wrote the book of Revelation after he saw a vision on the Isle of Patmos. He's got all these titles that, you know, this Christian superhero character, then he writes these three books, right? So which title does he mark himself with in these three letters, 1st, 2nd, 3rd John? What title is he going to appeal to give credibility to his letters? What title will he grab and then sign it with and make reference to so that he can say, you should be listening to me and you should hang on to these and study them and learn them because of who I am in this whole story. I mean, what's he going to appeal to? What's he going to say? I walked with Jesus his whole ministry. I was at the foot of the cross. I was the only one there. Only disciple that was there. He entrusted his mom to me as he was departing. I mean, I've got authority here. What's he going to do to give these three little letters power? And I searched them for his reference to himself. And one of them, 1 John, the one we're going to study, he doesn't sign it at all. He just has a subject matter. That's it. He writes a letter and it's just a subject matter. And he doesn't say who he was. He didn't even say his name. The second two, he doesn't appeal to all those great titles that would have given it like authority and put it in a biblical canon eventually. He just says, he titles himself twice in it. Just this simply says, the elder. All the titles he could have picked, and he picks one that we still use today. That we mere men feel like we can aspire to. We don't feel like we can aspire to be an apostle, like capital A, one of the 12 apostles, because that was reserved for them. But he uses just a title that every church from that time to this will still, whatever other titles churches use, of all denominations, they'll use this one. He decides just to grab on this one, the elder. I think he just wanted his authority to come from where I believe our elders, our shepherds' authority comes from. I think he wanted the authority of these books to come from his great love. Not from his title, not from his qualifications. The subject that he writes about, and he doesn't sign on 1 John, the subject he writes about is love. I mentioned last week how many times he mentioned the word world. It's in there an unbelievable amount of times. The only word that matches that one is this one, the word love. His authority came from his love. I think it's where Christ came from, and he witnessed that. So he wanted it to come from that same place. So today, I just want to kind of borrow on the great love demonstration that you've seen in Ken's life, that you've seen from him this morning and what he's continuing to doing in his life. I want to borrow on the great love that your elders have and have shown. And I want to borrow on the great love that John has shown and now writes about. And just, it's all reflective of a love that they've been given. You know, they're just giving what they've been given. It's all reflective of the love that Jesus has shown. I want to borrow on all that and just ask you simply today. This may be one of the most important questions that you ever ask, get asked. Ever. It is. This is the most important question you're ever going to be asked. You ready? Do you have great love? Now, one part of the answer is yes. I don't need you to answer it because it's true. And that's the love that the Father has given to you. You may not believe it. You may not have received it. You may not live in it. You may have a really bad memory and forget about it regularly. But the answer to that part of this question is yes. The way John says it, and the Bible said it so many ways. John says it in his gospel, God so loved the world that he gave his only son. I have a couple of sons and a daughter. I love you a lot, but like you, Ken, you've got a little daughter in your house. You love us a lot, but it's between us and them and her. It's right. It's her. God is the only father that I know that's done that. That's really done that. Said, if it's between you and my son, I'll choose both. And I'll do it in a way where I sacrifice my son. The Bible says it in so many ways. But John, in 1 John, here's just one of the ways I scavenged for it. He says, how great is the love the Father has lavished on us that we should be called children of God. And that is what we are. Are you listening? He gives you the title that Jesus Christ had. Child of God. You talk about an honorable title. This dwarfs being one of the 12 apostles. This dwarfs being a son of thunder. This dwarfs being John the Revelator and having your name in songs for decades and centuries. This is the title he wants to communicate. This is the identity he wants to deliver. This is the one he glories in. How great is the love the Father has lavished on you that you should be called a child of God. And yes, that is what you are. So the answer to this question, do you have great love? That part of it is yes. Yes, you do. There is nothing you can do to stop it. And that should give you so much security and so much confidence. There is nothing you can do to stop it. You are loved. It's lavished on you, and it does not matter how much you believe in it. It is still there. Yes, you have great love. But there's another part of the question. The other part of the question that I can't answer for you, that only you can answer, and it's between you and God. And that is, do you now have the great love of God in you? It sits and knocks on the door. It's pounding. But you have to open it and let it in. Here's how John says it a little bit later in his letter of 1 John. He says, whoever lives in love lives in God and God in him. So I ask you from this lens, do you have great love? Again, the love you and Jerry live with shows us about God. It shows us about Christ. The love, what you're doing today, sacrificially out of love for Kenna, and I really believe for us by doing it for Kenna. Thank you. Thank you in how you're showing it today. I know it won't be your last display of it. And I know it won't be our elders, and I know it won't be this church's. We have great love living in us that shows that God is in us. So how do you get it? Before I tell you that, I just want to ask our shepherds and our ministers to go ahead and spread out around the room. I'm praying that this display today is doing something in you. I'm praying that you're incited, not excited. I hope you're excited, but that this is inciting something in you that needs to connect, that needs to reach out and connect with that great love that's been lavished on you, and maybe connect to a fellowship of love that is also willing to be lavished on you. John says that it's not about doing something right, okay? It's about being something. The way he describes it lets you know it's not about logic. Okay, so if you're trying to reason it out, not that it's completely unreasonable and that doesn't have a place, but at the end of the day, it's not going to be reasonable. It's just going to be believed. He says, this is how you get it. This is how you open the door to the love that the Father's lavished on you. It's in 1 John 4:15. He says, if anyone acknowledges that Jesus is the Son of God, God lives in him and he in God. So do you have great love? It's been offered to you. That's a yes. Do you have it in you? A synonymous question is, have you acknowledged that Jesus is the Son of God? That Jesus is the deliverer of life? That Jesus is the love that he offered you? Do you have Jesus in you? Do you believe in him? Do you follow him? Do you want him? Do you desire him? Bill Knox, when he started out our thoughts on communion, he started out with what Paul said before he described the body and the blood of Christ. Paul says, for I receive from the Lord what I also pass on to you. That's what we're doing. That's what you're to do. We don't got anything superhero about it. There's nothing magical about coming to an elder or a minister. It's not the title. It's not anything like that. We're just passing on what we've received from God. What we've received from God is Jesus Christ, and we pass it on to you. Here's our promise. You will not find greater love anywhere. Try everything. And you will. You'll try lots of things. Some things more sinful than others. They are all you looking for what only Jesus Christ offers. Acknowledge Jesus Christ as the Son of God. And find out. Find out what it feels like to be saturated with this kind of fellowship with the Father and with the Father's children. Let's stand up and let's sing. And if there's any way you need to respond, please come now as we stand and sing.